Outdoor Edge knows that providing a freezer full of meat is part of the reason we all hunt. And what better way to bring it full circle than to process your own wild game? Outdoor Edge provides a full lineup of traditional and replaceable blade hunting knives and complete wild game processing kits to bring your wild game from the field to the freezer. Visit OutdoorEdge.com and at checkout, enter the discount code NATION30 for 30% off.
All right, guys, welcome to today's show. And joining me on the show today, I've got another Wisconsinite. His name is Ethan Sullivan, and we're going to talk about all sorts of outdoor activities in America's Dairyland. Now, I'm going to give him a chance, just like I've been giving a lot of different people chances to convert me into a diehard turkey hunter. This guy is so pumped. He's probably the most excited about turkey hunting out of anybody I've talked to yet, so we're going to see how that goes. But lots of good content coming your way. Let's jump right in.
Like, he was doing things that were just badass.
That was one of the coolest moments of my life.
I was really scared, but knowing that Dan had the gun, I did have the rifle, like, we would be okay.
All right, guys. So I know that last year was kind of a wild year for censorship for hunters and anglers. But that's why we've partnered with the social media platform Go Wild to combat mainstream social media censorship. Now, Go Wild is a free social community that was built by outdoors men and women just like me and you. Not only are your photos not censored on Go Wild, they're actually encouraged. And they give you points for things like sharing your trophies, gear reviews, and inviting friends. And as you earn those points, you can unlock awesome rewards like gift cards, free swag, knives, huge discounts on brands like Garmin and Vortex, and so much more. Check this out, though. If you create a free account, you can unlock $10 just for trying it out. So go visit downloadgowild.com to get started. All right, guys, welcome to today's show. And joining me on the show is another fellow Wisconsinite. Of course, I'm kind of a traitor. I moved out, but he still lives there. Ethan Sullivan, what's going on, man?
Hey, man, how's it going? It's going pretty good. It's windy and cold, typical Wisconsin spring weather. I mean, I don't know what Missouri's like anymore, but.
Man, it's been, you know. I got back from Texas 2 days ago now, and it was like 75 degrees when I got back, which I left in like the 40s. And so coming back, I was like, man, maybe I brought some Texas weather back up with me.
Nice.
Yeah, I don't care for the heat.
Yeah, I seen that you guys were out on the hog hunt. That's pretty cool, man.
It was unbelievable. Like we chatted a little bit before the recording, and I'm telling you, I'm gonna have to get like a whole. I'm gonna put out an invite to all the listeners, to former guests. Maybe I'll open it up to guests on the podcast first, and then try to get like an awesome weekend where we go down there and just get on hogs left and right. I think it would be a ton of fun.
Dude, that'd be awesome. You're gonna get me in trouble with the wife. She sees this. we're gonna have a conversation.
Man, we'll just plan it out. Like, we find people to do childcare. We'll send the wives to Florida, and then we'll go down to Texas, and they won't even think twice about us being there.
Look at you being. That's why you're the brains of the operation. Right on. There we go.
I know. Keep her happy. It means I get to go on more hunting trips. That's just
that's
a recipe for success right there.
Yes, sir.
Well, man, why don't you start out by sharing with the listeners a little bit about yourself, maybe some hunting history, kind of what you're interested in the outdoor world.
Okay. Well, so I born and raised in Wisconsin, been a part of the Orange Army pretty much ever since I could hold a firearm at 12. We went out and we did the deer drives, and we sit there in frigid cold, and this is fun, as you got icicles hanging off of you, you know. And then my dad started taking me out small game hunting. We'd go out squirrel hunting and stuff, and I remember it. Oh, I don't even remember how old I was. I just remember doing it. I shot my first squirrel, man. I about turned inside out. I was so excited. I was hooked after that. So I'd walk around the woods carrying a BB gun. I'd take a couple pop cans with me and hang them up on limbs, you know, and that's how I got started in hunting. And then, my second year, I got skunked my first year. My second year, I shot my first 8-point buck and, really got into that. And then for Christmas, I was just barely in high school. I got my first bow. Well, that was a problem because I've been a bow hunting addict ever since. And been doing a lot of deer management, a lot of pre-scouting, and just trying to get, it's like a giant chess game for me anymore. It's grown and evolved as I've grown up. And now it's turned into, I can't wait to get my kids out and have them have their first experiences and stuff like that. And I still turkey hunt in the spring. I go after them pretty hard. I rabbit hunt in the winter, and I love chasing walleyes in the spring. So that's a good time.
Man, that's awesome. I mean, I can relate on so many levels. I feel like a lot of Wisconsin hunters have a similar story. You know, the Orange Army is kind of our introduction, which is funny. You get like thrown into one of the largest like gun carrying groups on the planet as a young kid. But when you grow up around it, I mean, I remember like being 4 or 5 years old and I would wake up opening day with my parents. They'd be telling me to go get them hand warmers, open them up, shake them for them. And I never got to go with at that age, but it was like just the anticipation of like, man, one year I'm going to be able to go out and do this. And then as soon as it came, like there's no turning back. You're just hooked for life. And so,
oh dude, I remember my mom coming in, waking me up, getting me ready for school. And first thing out of my mouth was, did you get one?
Yep.
And man, them mornings when she'd tell me she'd get one, I was so mad I had to go to school.
Oh yeah. When they come back with one, I mean, I remember we would hang them on the clothesline, like, the tee that came up for the clothesline, we'd hang them on that, or they'd just show up with them in whatever vehicle we had at the time. That's the funny part. People don't realize, like, they think, oh, deer hunter, it's going to be in the bed of a pickup truck. You will see deer on literally every type of vehicle if you drive around in Wisconsin during that 9-day season. Like, it doesn't, you could have a Tesla, and there's got to be somebody that's got a deer on the back of a Tesla at some point throughout the season.
I haven't seen a Tesla, but man, I ain't kidding. If I'd have had my camera in time, I seen one come up on a Prius. I ain't even kidding.
That's awesome. Yeah, people, I mean, that's just part of it. People would drive around, show them off, or if it wasn't a pickup truck, you'd have the tailgate down so everybody could see what you shot. And it's just the culture up there. It's amazing, and there's no place. I mean, I'm sure other states have their own version of that, but there's no place like it.
Dude, the one thing I do miss, though, is going to the tavern and registering deer and doing stuff like that. Like, everything here now is online. You can register everything online. So, I mean, the camaraderie is still there, but, you know, you have that when you'd go into the tavern, you wouldn't say nothing. You go grab your slip and they'd see you check buck, and then everybody was going to the truck. You know,
dude,
what I mean?
I don't know if you heard on this episode, I don't remember who I was talking to, but I said, I am going to start a movement where we bring back check stations. I have talked to so many people that are like, dude, I miss going. And like, they got the Polaroid camera and they snap your picture and tack it up on the board.
Yeah.
And they've got a weigh station in the back if you want to check your weight. Or, you know, sometimes you could like say, hey, this is how much I think it is. Put your, basically do a little betting on it. Like, hey, if you're within 5 pounds of the weight, you know, you get a soda or something like that. Like, there was so many cool, competitions, like you said, the camaraderie, the fellowship, just everybody gathering around a tailgate at the gas station. And now I just don't see it anymore. It used to be like as soon as the sun went down, you know, as soon as legal shooting hours were up, you'd be driving over to the corner store or the bar or the restaurant or whatever it was that had the check station in your area, and everybody would be there walking around sharing stories.
Yeah, and you knew if someone was late that something good was coming. Exactly. Something happened, you know?
Oh, you're looking around and you're like, man, where is he at? And then sure enough, he pulls up late and everybody flocks to the back of his truck. Oh my gosh, I just think that would be cool. I understand as far as like gathering numbers and stuff like that on the DNR side of it, I'm sure there's plenty of benefits. They wouldn't just switch to all electronic for no reason, but the camaraderie of it, if we can't convince the DNR to bring back check stations, we just need to convince more businesses, more small businesses to open up big buck pools, weigh stations, anything like that, or give people 10% off if they show up with a dead deer, you know?
Right. Yeah, for sure. Or like, I know some small mom and pop stores here, you know, you bring in a deer and you bring your hide in, you get a pack of gloves.
Yeah. Yeah, you do you something know? Like that. I'm really hoping one day in my podcast studio right now, I'm just up basically in an attic. I've got a black sheet hung behind me and I just bought some sound dampeners, but I'm really hoping one day to have enough deer hides or furs of other kinds to where that is my entire sound dampener for the whole studio.
Oh, that'd be so cool, man.
Yeah. That's my goal. I've been keeping all my coyote furs and I'm going to start doing the same thing with all my deer hides. So
pretty soon you're going to have to save you up some turkey feathers and hang behind you too.
Okay. So I'll send you a picture after this. All of my mounts currently are over at my buddy's house and I made a whole turkey wall. They've got all the beards and fans except, oh dude, one of the dogs got a hold of one of the turkey beards the other day. And yeah, it wasn't up on the wall. We had a couple of them that were just like, we were going to dip in wax, you know, to keep them all together. And we look over and this turkey beard was just shredded. Well, I had one that was, it's the unofficial state record beard length. And I was like, dude, it better not be that one. It better not be that one. Sure enough, it was not.
Oh, no.
He found mine, but I think it was my buddy Drew's. And so one year, and sorry for the listeners who have heard this a million times, we shot two birds. His beat the state record by like a quarter of an inch. Mine beat it by 3/8 of an inch. And we didn't know that we had beat the record at all. I mean, I didn't know what the state record was because I had never paid attention to it until the following year. I was looking up the state record for weight and I came across the numbers for everything else, spur length and beard length and all of that. And I discovered that we had both shot birds the previous year that would have beat the state record. Yeah. So anyways, I hope it wasn't his. I haven't looked too hard to find out what turkey that actually came off of, but
man, my heart would have broke. I don't know if I'd have been mad or if I'd have been crying. That's rough.
I don't mess with dogs. Like I love dogs, but if a dog is not well behaved, it drives me crazy. I'm like, just take that sucker out back. Like it's worthless. Like I love when dogs are well trained, and dogs that just chew stuff up, if they beg at the table, if they just don't listen, if they flat out like ignore you, like, dude, this animal is for us. It shouldn't be a hindrance. It shouldn't be a problem.
Right.
Like it should benefit us in some way.
The one that really gets me that'll I don't care is when you see the dog now going down the road and you holler for them, they stop and look at you and then they kick it into a higher gear and run away from you.
Oh, dude, nothing makes me more mad. I had dogs like that. I've had plenty of them. And I'll go into a quick story. So I don't know if I've shared this one on the podcast yet, but there's a guy that lived close by and his actual name was Charlie Brown. And Charlie, he lived about a mile away. Well, my wife and I, we went up to Kansas City for our anniversary. And we're in Kansas City. My dad was in town, so he was watching my dogs. Well, my dogs, they would either be in an enclosed fence, like in the backyard, or in the house all the time. And one day, I had a black lab that was my waterfowl dog. Absolutely loved it. I mean, it wasn't like some crazy awesome dog that would stop at 200 yards if you blew the whistle and you could cast it, but it would go and pick up birds, right? I wanted a dog that would be more of a protector for the property. And so I found, it was an Akita. No, what was it? Oh, sorry. It was like a Bull Mastiff Akita mix or something like that. It was a huge dog. And I went and got it and the people were like, oh, it's awesome. You know, they're telling me about the dog. They said, you know, it does like to get out every now and then, but it'll come back to its name. So we pick it up, get it home. I'm trying to work with it. The dog has no idea what its name is. I mean, I'm yelling for this thing out in the middle of a field, and it is completely clueless. It's just running around, and I'm like, I'm never going to get this dog back. This is day one. What have I done? So anyways, it runs off and I'm like, dude, I can't even get back there. It's barbed wire and stuff. Like, it's the neighbor's property. And so I was like, all right, well, if it comes back, it comes back. If not, I mean, I don't know what to do. And right. It did. It ended up coming back that night. I woke up and it was at the back door. And so I was like, all right, at least I know it's smart enough to come back. Well, down the road, my wife and I go up to KC for our anniversary, and I get a call from my dad, and he goes, I don't know where your dogs are. And I'm like, what do you mean you don't know where they are? Oh, well, I let them out, and then they took off running. And I'm like, you got to be kidding me. Well, Coda was the Bull Mastiff Akita mix, and he was the one that wouldn't listen. My dog Rudy, who is the waterfowl dog, he would typically listen. Now that there was a second dog there that had no regard for humans, he just followed. And so they both took off. So my dad's looking around for him. He calls me back later. Oh, hey, I kept looking, couldn't find them. I'm going to see if they come back. Well, I get a call at this point from my neighbor, Charlie Brown. And I didn't see it when it first came in, so I listened to the voicemail. And it's Charlie telling me that that he's got the dogs up at his place. So I call my dad, and I'm like, hey, you need to go up and get the dogs from Charlie's place. And he's like, yeah, I'll go look for them in a minute. I'm like, you don't have to look for them. They are up there. You got to go get them. Then I get another call back from my dad, and he's laughing, and I'm like, what's going on? He's like, oh, it was like a nervous laugh too. So I knew something was up, and he kind of like chuckles. He's like, you might want to call Charlie. And I'm like, okay, why? He goes, well, the dogs ate all his chickens. And I'm like, wait, oh, what? No. I'm like, are you kidding me right now? He's like, yeah, you need to call him. And he's like laughing still. I'm like, I'm glad you think this is funny. I don't think this is funny. These dogs were your responsibility this weekend. We were only gone for a couple days, and you let him go and eat his chickens. So I called Charlie, and he didn't care at all. He was laughing about it, and he's like, oh, I hated those chickens. You did me a favor. The only reason we kept them was for my wife. And so I was like, oh, at least – I was like, either way, let me know what I owe you for them. I'll come give you a hand around the property. I'll pay you for them, whatever. And he's like, you don't owe me a thing. So all that to say, that just grew my hate for dogs that don't listen and that are untrained.
Yeah. Yeah, touche, man. I agree with that. I've had a couple that are headaches too.
Yeah. Yeah. I feel like everybody has, they say that you get one good dog, like one truly good dog in your life. And I'm hoping that one's coming. I actually just put a deposit on a dog up in Montana. The litter isn't born yet, but it's a guy who breeds and trains British Labradors. And so I've got pick of the litter. I'm hoping to get a male red lab, and, yeah, I'm pretty pumped.
You're gonna get a fox red,
dude.
And you went hog hunting out of a helicopter,
dude.
Like, what is going on?
I know, right? He sent me pictures of the male and female from two litters that are gonna be coming this summer. And when I saw that red, my first dog ever was a red lab, and it was completely untrained, but its name was Rusty, and I just remember, like, in my mind, I can still see that dog. I was just a kid. Like, that dog was probably gone before I could walk, but I just remember in my mind this dog, and I was like, man, I've got to have one again at some point in my life. And so, yep, going to get a red.
Right and, on, man.
Well, we'll see. If they have a male red out of that litter, I'm going to pick one up. But if not, we're going to go with a yellow, and either way, I'm pumped to have a dog that is professionally trained, go out with it. It listens. It does what I tell it to. And just to have it on trips with me. Like, on a 9-hour road trip to Texas that I just got done doing, it would have been so awesome to have my dog sitting in the passenger seat.
Oh, right. For sure, man. Yeah.
Yeah. So, looking at the wall, obviously the listeners can't see it, but looking at the wall behind you, you've got some studs back there. You've got an elk and three really nice whitetails.
I appreciate it, man. Thanks.
I'm guessing the elk, I mean, that's not in Wisconsin probably, but those deer, those were all there locally?
Yeah, they're all off my family farm right by Toma. Nice. There's two more euros right up above me. My wife's got her first buck, and I've got my biggest rifle buck there. But, yeah. They're all three bow kills. they were all on 120 acre property. And then the elk is the elk I shot this last fall out in Colorado that you and I were emailing back and forth about.
Oh yeah, man, that's so sweet. Yeah. We were out there both second rifle and yep. We weren't that far from each other.
No, you were about an hour and a half north, I think, 2 hours north.
Yeah. But yeah, you had some success there. We did not. We kind of struck out, but my other buddies, they had quite a bit of success. I just, man, there's something about traveling and hunting. I don't know what it is. Like I've always enjoyed having a place where I could like walk outside and go and hunt. But when you actually like leave, when you stay the night somewhere, there's a totally different feel about it.
Oh yeah. You want to like, you get out of you jump in your truck and you go down the road a little ways, or you jump in the four wheeler, you go up and you sit in the deer stand. It's almost repetitive. Same old, you know?
Yep.
And you're waiting for something that you've hoped and dreamed of for in that, but you go out west or you travel quite a ways and you get out there and you set up your camp and you do a day or two of scouting, and then you strike a bull and you see him. It's just that I agree completely. It was completely eye opening, especially coming from small town Wisconsin.
Yeah.
And having this hope and dream of going out and doing that, and then you see your first wild bull elk, and I was like, I was done. I'm good. I can sit at the campsite now. I seen a bull in Colorado in the Rockies. We're aces.
Yeah, dude. There really is something just totally different about it. And when you like, I mean, when you've been gearing up for it or thinking about it for a long time, I just wish more people knew. Like, these opportunities are out there. And I think with social media and with podcasts and TV shows, like, these opportunities are becoming more available, or people realize how available they are. But,
yeah,
man, I wish I would have known early on. I wish I would have known in my teens about opportunities out west. And I would have been putting in for points way back then. I'm looking at it, and I'm like, dude, I could have like 18 points right now or more. If I would have started at 15, if I would have known about this stuff, I would have been putting in, and yeah, I'd be ready to go kill a bighorn or a moose, or, you know, have my pick of most units out there with my bow.
Right. Speaking of opportunities, now we'll go back to the elk hunt and stuff. I was blessed. Okay. Now this is the end of the whole works. There's quite a rigmarole of stories that led up to this. So it was my dad and I that went out by ourselves, and it was day two. The lower CV or the lower unit on my front tire let go on my four wheeler. We only had one four wheeler out there. We were about a mile away from the truck, and the CV axle slipped out. So right there, I'm like, cool, here we go. We got out there and got ready to get set up and everything. And then we got up there late, and then it snowed like 8 inches. And long story short, we got everything all set up. We started hunting first day. We didn't see anything. We actually bumped into these guys from Kansas. And if it was not for that group of guys, I would not have been able to have the experience I had with my dad. And I doubt I'd have been able to get a bull. We actually were sitting up on a ridge glassing and looking, and all of a sudden we look down at 400 yards and there's three satellite bulls walking right toward us. Damn. And I was like, no way, you know, like, this is awesome. And he's on the radio talking to his son and saying, hey, I think I'm going to shoot this bull. And I'm like, oh, I'm going to touch an elk. Like, this is so awesome. Right.
Yeah.
And so he's got his rifle up on the tripod, and he turns around and he's looking at it and he's looking at me, and I'm like, what are you? He's over there. Concentrate over there. Like, don't worry about me. I'm good.
Yeah.
And then he turns around and he goes, you want to shoot it? And I'm like, what? How far away is it? He's like, oh, it's only 420 yards. I'm like, dude, you're on something. Cause I am not, I'm sighted in for 200 yards. That's all I got.
Yeah.
That's it. And he goes, no, he goes, you can use my gun. What? Yeah. Met this guy. I bet I'd known him for a day and a half. And I probably said six words to him. The generosity that he gave to me and to my dad to get us around and show us around. I mean, my dad seen a moose, his first ever wild moose and a cougar.
Dang.
And man, the hunting techniques they had, and he was calling me 2 weeks ago wanting to know if I was going back out again. Like, they were so for getting us out there and having a good time. And yeah, I took his rifle and then I squeezed off two rounds and he tipped over, and I realized that 420 yard shot was pretty awesome, but the mile and a half pack out, I had a reckoning with the good Lord.
Oh yeah. The trigger squeeze is always fun. The realization of what's about to come after that gets, that'll sober you up pretty quick.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. It was really awesome. And then it was really, really cool getting down to them and everything. And, you know, and how thick their hide was, that's what blew me away.
Oh, yeah.
I couldn't get over that. And then we started packing. And then I had to contemplate my life choices.
Yep. Those full bag packouts, man, they will make a man out of anybody. You're going to find out how much quit you have in you trying to pack something, especially if you shoot one downhill and then have to pack it back uphill. Wow, what a cool deal. So he let you do that. Did he go down there with you then and help?
Well, so there was three bulls. One wasn't legal, and then the other two were legal. And when I shot, mine tipped over. His son actually shot the top bulls. So we didn't have one. We had two bulls to pack out.
Oh, dang.
And there was, all together with my dad and I with them, there was six guys in the group. And so he went down, his uncle went down, and then his son went down and I went down. My dad and another guy stayed up just to stay with the four-wheelers.
Yeah.
And so with us going down there, we had two bulls packed out in 5.5 hours.
Dang.
Like that. Yeah, it was a day.
Yeah. Yeah, it takes a long time. I mean, even just the quartering process, like not counting boning the meat out. If you bone the meat out, like if you're way back in there, that takes even longer. Having to be careful to keep evidence of sex on one of the quarters, you know, like
right.
There's just so much that goes into it where we had to do some of that stuff. Actually, it was another group of non-resident guys from California, and they had our number, and every night we would go up to the top of this mountain on the side-by-sides and the four-wheelers to check for cell service and like to call our wives back home or FaceTime the kids or whatever. And we got up there, and these guys had called us and texted us multiple times that they had a bull down way in the back. And so we went back in there. It was like, I don't think we got to them until like 10:30 or 11:30 at night. And then we still had to, they had it mostly quartered up at that point. We helped them finish. And then we helped them hike it all the way back up, man. But
nice.
When you get in with other people, especially other out of state people, I feel like they're pretty awesome. I mean, like, I haven't had any bad encounters with other non-residents in Colorado.
Oh, yeah. See, and that was one thing I was expecting, honestly, was for people to be kind of kept to themselves and, you know, like public hunting around here, nobody talks about nothing because you don't give your spots away.
No.
You know? And out there, they were opening day. We had found some bull tracks, and we were kind of moseying around, and I went on a hike. We didn't find no elk. We were looking, and we didn't see nothing. Well, got to be the end of the day, and we're like, okay, this is enough of this. Let's go back, start a campfire, and fry some eggs and sausage up and call it a day. Well, they come down, and they had a 5x6 that they had shot. And nice. I was just, dude, blown away. I'm like, that is a big animal. Like, holy smokes, right? And so I went and grabbed them all a beer. I'm like, you know, let's celebrate, you know, that they acted like it was no big deal. You know, they just, It was what it was. And then one of them come back up later and he goes, we wanted to invite you guys out tomorrow. You want to come hunting with us? And I was just floored. I was like, I suppose I ain't got nothing to offer you other than a strong back. So I guess we'll give her a whirl.
Yeah. Man, that's just awesome. I love the hospitality of hunters. Like that. I mean, Some people in Colorado don't care for when I stop and talk to others. Like, but if there's other hunters passing on a four-wheeler, I'll stop and chat with them. If I'm driving around or if I'm looking around or if I see anybody, typically I try to make friends with them. I talk to them. I'm not going to give them all the secrets away, but like all the guys that I hunt with, they're all about getting first timers a bull or a cow or, you know, just an opportunity to see one or pull the trigger. So.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that was really humbling to me. And it gave me faith in the fact that, you know, the traditional hunter is not dead, you know?
Oh yeah. No, there's plenty of good guys out there. And there's a few bad ones that, you know, seem to give everybody a bad name. But for the most part, once you meet people in person, face to face, they're pretty cool. And even if they're standoffish at first, we're all out there for the same reason. We all love the same thing. Right. So why not get along? So, yeah. So that was your bull. Are you going back this year?
Dude, I want to so bad. I mean, but we are definitely doing next year. I can't do this year.
Okay.
So yeah, I want to, but the wife's telling me that we're taking our late honeymoon and we're going to be going to Ireland this next year.
Oh, so dang.
Funds are going to, yeah.
Hey, that'll be fun though. I don't know what kind of hunting opportunities Ireland has to offer. I think they run like whippets and greyhounds for rabbits out there. That's something I've always been interested in doing. Have you seen that?
No, I haven't.
So what they'll do, I want to say it's Ireland. I might be wrong on that, but what they'll do is they'll take like almost snow fencing or netting, and they'll stake out around this area where there's just rabbit holes all over in the side of a hill or up on a flat area. And then they take ferrets. They've got pet ferrets that they bring out, and they let them go down in these holes. Well, the ferrets will go out and chase the rabbits out, and the rabbits pop out of the holes and take off running, and they've got greyhounds and whippets that take off and they'll go catch the rabbits. And so they literally don't even have guns or anything. They just use a ferret and a dog to go and catch a bunch of rabbits. Yeah, and then they've got that netting up on the edges in case the rabbits get away from the dog or they pop out and the dog doesn't see it right away. They'll run straight into that netting so they can't get away. Yeah, it's sweet, man. That's on my bucket list. I want to check it out, and I'm pretty sure it's in Ireland.
Well, now I'm going to have to go do it because you're getting a fox red lab and you went shooting hogs out of a helicopter. So I got to get one up on you.
Yeah, dude. If you do, send me some pictures and videos, man. That'll be a cool deal.
Oh, for sure. Yeah, no, we're pretty excited. We've been saving up for that for quite a while, so.
Yeah.
Next year for sure, though.
Next year, getting back out there. Yeah, that's Colorado, man. It's got a special place in my heart now. And I've got people that are like, oh, dude, you should come out to Utah or Montana or Wyoming or whatever. But, like, there's something about the camaraderie of the guys that I hunt with. I absolutely love it. And I'm sure I could build that with another group of people in a different state. But I just would have a hard time if it fell in the same time frame to give up that group of guys and that elk camp for a new one. What's it like up there?
Go ahead. Well, like being when Dad and I went out in the mountains, I've known my dad, grew up with my dad my whole entire life. And so there's something about being up in the mountains and it'll bring you closer.
Yep.
And the adverse scenarios we had of Jimmy rigging a four wheeler together to taking 2.5 days to get a tent set up because we kept getting dumped on with snow. And, you know, like, I hear you, man. Like, you know, you almost feel like you're meeting up with long lost family going out there.
Oh yeah. Yeah, you definitely do. It's just cool to be in that scenario, to be kind of unplugged. I mean, some of the places that we've camped in the past have had cell service, but I love when you get to a spot where you don't, where it's just like, there's no distraction from the outside world. Like, you're fully present in that moment. And even when I do have cell service, I typically put my phone on airplane and keep it tucked away somewhere. But what is deer camp like up in Wisconsin for you? I love hearing different deer camp stories because Unless you've been there, unless you've experienced it, like you've referenced your family farm a couple times. And when you just hear like, oh, the old family farm, it's just like, you know, there's so many stories and so much history tied into it.
Oh, man. So as far as I can remember, there's always been this big blue pot full of chili. Every morning, opening morning, everybody goes to their same spot they've gone to forever and ever and ever. And it's so funny because I've got a cousin that you can almost time him. His clock never changes. He'll get out there and come 10:30. He's got to go back to the house.
Yeah.
It's pretty awesome, but I guess the only thing that changes from time to time is how many people go out. Like, I mean, I've got my kids growing up now and everything, but, so we've always got a big pot of chili going on. We've always got, if you can tell anymore, if one person shoots, you can tell who it was by the sound of the rifle. That sounds crazy.
No, you can't. I totally understand that.
And so we've got a telephone pole up in the trusses in the shed, and that's where we hang our deer up at. And so when we, at the end of the day, we always all get together, we get our pictures taken with them and do all that stuff and everything. But the night before is sitting around at my mom and dad's, and you remember them old, Monster Buck DVDs, VHS tapes and everything. We all pile around, everybody's got orange hat on or their bibs on or something. And we're hanging around eating supper and we watch them videos until we're blue in the face. Yep. And then of course the 30 point buck, you got to listen to that.
You always listen to the 30 point buck. Yep. Yeah, we listen to that on the way out to the field every day, or on the way out to the woods every day. So, like, it'll be like 4:30 in the morning or whatever time we're driving over, and we've just got that thing playing. Now, they've made like a follow-up song to it, but I'm like, nothing beats the original. Nothing ever will. Like, once you start remaking it or redoing it, it's like, okay, cool, but the original is where it's at. All right, guys, I need to take a quick second to tell you about a product that I've been using for quite a while now. It's called Bull Elk Beard Oil. If you've spent any amount of time in the outdoors, whether it's on the mountain, in the marsh, or in the woods, you've felt the effects of the wind, the sun, and the cold on your face. What this product does, it helps you look better, feel more confident, and it helps your beard keep its moisture. Not to mention, it smells great, so now my wife can't complain as much after I come home from a long week of elk hunting. Now, I need to tell you, I've gotten to know Brian, the founder, over the past couple months, and he is an awesome guy. Brian made sure that all of these oils are made out of clean products right here in the USA. He also loves to give back to the outdoor community, whether that's through fundraisers for public land acquisitions or even helping donate money to cover the surgery cost of duck dogs. He's an amazing guy, and he makes an amazing product. So go check out bullelkbeardoil.com. And be sure to check out the subscription options so that you don't have to run out of your favorite facial hair product. Plus, you can use the code NOMADIC and get 20% off your order.
Right. Yep. And then we just end up driving around, and you can, usually the last weekend we'll do small pushes. But it's kind of hard because now a lot of people don't drive anymore.
No, they don't.
A lot of people don't push anymore.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know when that big change happened, but I remember that was like, it seemed like in the middle of the week when everything was slowing down, you know, the deer would just get tucked away in some cover where they felt safe. And so then everybody would go and they'd do big deer drives. And I mean, you're talking sometimes 40, 50 people involved in this, you know, especially if the corn was still standing or if it's thick timber, you know, you've got your shooters out on the ends or on the corners and just a whole line of guys walking through to push any deer out. But yeah, I haven't, I think this last year, actually, I heard what sounded like a deer drive because of all the gunfire. I mean, you could really hear people letting loose, but that's probably the only thing that I've heard or seen for quite a while. People really? Doing deer. I mean, I guess it's still been happening, but just not as often, I feel like.
Right. And not in the size that it, you know, I remember all the neighbors banding together. We drove out a property one time and it had a bunch of fingers in it. And I was standing up on the point of it and I looked down and I had to do like a triple take because I'd never seen so many deer in one spot in my entire life. They had found themselves a little rabbit hole down there and they kicked them up. Holy smokes. They came over that crest into safe shooting area and it was like World War III, man. Yep. It was nuts.
I can't imagine, like, I don't try to put myself in the mind of a deer very often, but like, imagine just chilling in a spot you hang out at every single day. You know, like you're in there, you take a nap every day at this time in the same spot or in the same general area, and then all of a sudden you see 30 dudes in orange walking towards you and you're just like, oh, this is weird, I better get out of here, only to come across an ambush of even more dudes firing at you.
Yeah, right. Oh man. Right.
Yeah, that'd be, I mean, I don't think deer think logically at all. I mean, I think it's all 100% survival on their part, but I'm just like, right. Yeah, that'd be kind of weird, man. That'd be real weird.
Yeah, that'd definitely be, I guess if you could relay it to a modern day zombie apocalypse type of deal,
yeah,
and you
woke
up at the wrong spot and had to get moving. Like,
I bet that's kind of what it would be like. So you guys deer hunt up there. What other types of hunting do you do there on the family farm?
Well, we do the 9-day, the Orange Army. We bow hunt and we do a lot of small game, rabbit hunting in the winter, squirrel hunting in the fall. And then I've got an extremely soft spot for turkey hunting in the spring.
All right.
And we do fishing and stuff too, but on the home farm, it's for me, it's a complete toss up between bow hunting and turkey hunting, man.
Dude, I've been giving people extra time on the show lately to convince me that turkey hunting is that great. It's as great as people crack it up to be, because you find diehard bow hunters, right? You typically don't find a lot of like just 100% diehard gun hunters. Like, they'll do it. They grew up doing it. It's tradition, that type of deal. Yeah. But when you get into the turkey hunting people, I mean, they are just so sold out. There's nothing better than it. Like, that is the time of year that they absolutely live for. And that's fine. I mean, I'm glad that people are so passionate about stuff. But I'm the guy that's like, but is it really? Is it really that good?
It is, man. I mean, when you're getting up at 3:45 in the morning and you know that this bird has roosted here for the last 4 days, it's opening day, and there's a little bit of frost on the grass, and you got to go plop your butt down next to a tree that you think is going to work out just fine, and then you do a couple of tree yelps, maybe do a small fly down cackle, you know, just when it's light enough, obviously, and then you've got your hen and Jake sitting out there in the field, and all of a sudden you hear, like, it I don't know, it's so comparable to like an awesome semi flipping a Jake on. It's just like
dude, you are fired up, man. I see, and that's what I want to feel that toward turkey hunting, but I get excited, don't get me wrong. I'm looking forward to it. In fact, just to my right, I've got a bunch of stuff. I just got a new turkey decoy in. I've heard a lot of people talk about the funky chicken. It's like the skinny one. And they're like, man, toms just hate it for some reason. And so I picked one of those up. I've got a new Avian X hen. I got a new turkey vest. I've got a new shotgun. I got a new choke. I'm figuring out what ammo that choke and the shotgun combo like the best. And so, like, I'm gearing up.
What kind of shotgun you got, Dan?
It's a Benelli Super Black Eagle 3, 20 gauge.
Okay.
Yep. Yeah, I've used a Winchester Ranger pump 20 gauge for almost all my life. It does not accept a choke. In fact, it's the same shotgun and same barrel that I used to shoot deer in the woods with slugs through. I mean, it is I mean, I've shot every type of animal with this gun, and finally I was like, you know what? I'm going to get a new shotgun. I'll never get rid of the old one, but I said, I'm going to get a new one, see if I can't extend my range out a little bit more. But yeah, so all that to say, I talk crap on turkey hunting. I do enjoy it. I go every year. I typically get a turkey every year. But hearing about the different calls that you do, you know, getting patterning a turkey and knowing what tree it's going to be in, like, I feel like I would really get in on that type of thing. But I typically just go sit the same field every year because I know at some point the turkeys are going to come through there. I'll put right trail on cameras out, but I feel like if I could know where a turkey was roosted and get underneath that tree, like sneak in underneath that tree and wait for it to pitch down, like that would be pretty fun. I just have not, I have not successfully done that yet.
Okay. So here's the best way that I can compare it. Okay. You go out and you scout deer, right? You got your trail cameras. Yep. You do your scouting, you set your stands up, you know, you go through all that and logistically by the evidence that you see with pictures and everything like that, you should have a good chance, especially if you're in a high traffic area for the rut.
Yep.
Okay. Turkeys don't do that. They can turn around and fly 200 yards to the right when they are supposed to come here. They've got a brain about the size of a pea, and I've been outsmarted by them buggers more times than not. And that's why it's addictive. It's stupid fun. You never know what they're going to do, when they're going to do it. And you can't base your success rate off of a decision of a turkey. If it's going to happen, it's going to happen.
Yeah.
And I feel like if you can cover at least four bases for that turkey, at least allow for there to be six more, because he will find a loophole in your plan somewhere. And it's just a giant chess game. And I've heard of, you know, like Michael Waddell has compared it to hunting elk out during the rut.
Yeah.
You know, it's I don't know, man. There's something about run and gun. And I don't just hunt on the family farm. I'll go out on public ground too and go back in them deep holes and stuff. And there's birds back in there. And man, there's nothing better sitting up on a ridge. And then birds start gobbling up on a tree before light, and you're like, oh, gosh.
Man, I can see how it could get addicting in a hurry. I think maybe another part of the issue for me is that the turkeys here, like, I've been able to kill them, and I'm not good at calling. I'm not good at the logistics or planning it out. I don't know, like, oh, man, the turkey's going to be here at this time with this weather condition. I just don't understand turkeys well enough to be like a great smart turkey hunter. What I do, I go sit out in the same field. If they come by me, great. Most of the time they don't, and I see them across the field, and I'll use the shadows, I'll use the cover, and I'll try to get out in front of them, and I'll just sit and wait until they get close enough. Like last year, I think it was either last year or the year before, man, I just went after them. Like, yeah. They kept crossing way up onto the property, like way at a different spot than I had been set up at. And one day they did it again, and I went up there after them looking for them. I'm like, they had to have come through here. So I go in the woods, and I'm just kind of creeping through the woods little by little, and I look way out in the bean field, and they're on the other side of it, but they were working toward the woods. And so I probably moved 10 different times on that hunt and just used the shadows, got 50 yards inside the woods so they couldn't see me moving, and then I'd pop back out, find out where they were. And that seems to be how most of my hunts go. And so maybe it's that I give up on, like, the traditional method too soon, and I just go after them, and I'll do whatever it takes to kill one.
Oh, dude, I love run-and-gun style. I guess I can sit for a while, but I love moving and switching and becoming real variant with stuff, because like you said, they don't stop, and you don't know what they're gonna do, and you have to be able to adapt at a moment's notice to try and get around them and get after them, to where, like, I mean, there are things that you can, you know, you can do to advance yourself. Like this year I'm gonna try, I bought a turkey fan.
Yeah.
And I'm going to try going right out into the field. I mean, I'm 6'5", 245 pounds, so it's got to be pretty big to hide behind.
They're big, man. You really can, especially if you have taller grass. If the grass is up like to your shins or even to your knees, you can almost just crouch instead of crawl behind it and get pretty close. I've got one of those turkey fans and I love it.
Yeah, that's going to be my goal. I'm going to scoop my butt across and I'm going to shoot one behind the fan. That's going
to
be fun.
I think that's going to be my next step. I obviously want it to happen the right way where they come into a gobble or you get set up in the right spot. You have like heavy action. They come to beat the crap out of your decoy right in front of you. Like, yeah. I want to experience that. But I think one of my next deals is going to be getting the bow-mounted turkey decoy or the silhouette. And I want to creep up on one like that and shoot one with my bow. If that doesn't get me fired up for turkey hunting, I don't think anything ever will.
Right, and then you just give me all your stuff and we'll call it good.
I'll just pass it all over to you, yeah. Vest, man.
And I'll show you what it looks like with it.
I will say, turkey hunters do a really good job of making awesome products for hunting. Like,
yes,
that turkey vest that I got is one of the coolest pieces of hunting equipment that I've bought so far. I don't even know who makes it. It was on Amazon. It was like the Amazon's Choice or something like that. It had like 9,000 reviews and it was at like 4.5 stars. But this sucker has the real thick, like, I mean, it's probably 3-inch flip down seat. And then on top of that, the frame itself has legs that flip backwards and you can push a pin and extend the legs to turn the whole vest into an actual chair. And I'm like, dude, I'm going to use this thing for everything. I will use that.
Yeah.
If I'm sitting on the ground for deer season, I'm going to use it for coyote hunting. You name it. That thing's probably going to go with me a lot of different places this year.
Right. That's handy, man. I've just got a plain Jane seat and stuff. I don't sit a whole lot, so I don't, you know. But yeah, that having a built-in chair like that, geez, you're riding around in a freaking Cadillac on your shoulders.
I know, man. It was cool. I've always, like, my buddies have always had the nice turkey vest with all the perfect pockets, you know, for a slate call or a box call or whatever. And most of them have had the flip-down cushions for their butt. And I'm like, man, those are cool. I would just wear like the leaf camo, and that was basically it. I'd carry everything out on my shoulders or in my hands. And finally I was like, you know what? I'm going to buckle, because every year I get out there opening day with my buddy Brad and he's got all the equipment and I'm like, dang it. Here I am like trying to just hold stuff. Like I'm carrying all the groceries inside. And I was like, finally, I just need to get one. And so I did. And I love it, man. I'm super pumped. Hopefully I can make it happen with one now.
Oh man. I hope so too, because if you get so. Not last year, the year before, I took my dad out and it was the last day of our season. And it was kind of the same scenario that I told you about. We had seen these birds strutting in this bean field 3 different mornings. And I just could not figure out. It was always late. I mean, they were out there at 10:45 in the morning. Like, what are you doing? Well, these birds were roosted way back up in the woods. So we just went up on the edge. I got to his house. We had a cup of coffee. We kind of decided what we were going to do for a plan. We moseyed up the hill and we found a decent tree to sit by, set the decoys out. And I could hear them just hammering on the tree. I mean, you could definitely tell they were boss. So I started doing a couple light yelps to them and stuff. And then it got light enough. The sun was cresting up. So I did a fly down cackle. And then all of a sudden I hear, woof, 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 woof. I'm like, oh, here they come. There was a logging road behind us, probably about 25 foot, and I could hear them. And I was like, oh, they're spitting and drumming. So I lean over to Dad, and I said, they're coming over here. He goes, okay. Well, to our right, they came out. There's a real thick brush pile right next to it, but they came out. It had to have been 5 feet away from us. I could hear their wings dragging on the leaves. My heart's pounding. I'm freaking out. They come out around the corner, and I hear my dad go, holy crap. So this was Dad's first bird, okay? So I'm like, Dad, shut up. Like, they're right there. They came out to the decoy, started squaring up to him, started chest bumping him. And I'm like, this is awesome. Well, they were kind of in line with each other like this, silhouetted with each other.
Yeah.
And so when they split up, I said, you ready to kill him? And he said, yeah. So I said, okay. 1, 2, 3, and we boom, boom, we doubled up and we ended up getting both birds. And Oh man, I was so wound up. I couldn't tell if I was coming or going or standing or sitting. I was, oh geez. that was a good day.
Oh
that was
man,
fun.
That is awesome. We doubled up this past year. That was the first time I've ever doubled up on birds. That was pretty sweet. I've had them spitting and drumming close by. I haven't had that, like, you can hear them right behind you moment. Typically, if I can hear them, they're out in front of me. But I hear stories about that, and I could see how that would get your heart racing, like sitting back up against a tree and you can hear them like right behind you, but you can't see them. My buddy Brad had one that actually like bumped into him. He thought it was coming around the right side of the tree, and he was just really, really slowly. I'm talking like maybe 1 degree every second, just turning and trying to catch a glimpse of it. 'Cause he's like, dude, I heard it behind me. I thought it was going to come around the right. And I'm sitting there like, man, did it get scared off? And he's like, just then I felt something brush against my shoulder and it scared the crap out of me. I jumped, the turkey took off, and he's like, it was a freaking Tom, and he had come around the other side of the tree. And I'm like, man, see, of that stuff, I could see it getting me fired up. And I never grew up, like, I grew up watching the big buck videos like you were talking about. I grew up watching Falling Feathers, all the duck hunting videos, like Buck Guard. I mean, anybody that made a hunting video about waterfowl or deer, I've probably seen it. Turkey hunting, I just never, like, my family didn't turkey hunt, even though there's turkey out there. Like, we just never got into it, so.
Yeah, see, I actually never started, I never actually went hunting on my own. I went with my dad a couple times when I was younger. I actually, when H.S. Strutt used to have the VHS tape with the three mouth calls that you could buy, my dad couldn't use his mouth calls because they're an acquired usage, I guess.
Yeah.
And I practiced with them when I was a kid, and I always took people out. Like, they'd want me to go call for them, and I just never had a desire. You know, I thought it was cool calling them in, and that was it. And then I started going out and hunting them, and I actually, you know, got to shoot one, and then I was like, yep, nope, okay, take my money.
Yeah. Dude, hearing you talk about the different calls and stuff too, like when they do a certain call when they're coming out of the roost, dude, I know nothing about any of that. I know the very basic, like two calls, and I don't know when I'm supposed to use them, when I'm not, which is probably why they never actually come all the way into me to give me a shot. But I use visual more than anything, you know, like if I've got a decoy. We used to sit on this fence row right by these hay bales, and I would put a decoy out and I'd just kind of like reach out and spin it, or my turkey fan. I'd give it a flash here and there so that it would catch their attention, and then I'd hide it so that they couldn't see it anymore. But as far as calls go, I'm just so uneducated. I don't know when to do it, what to do, for how long, what to do in response, whatever. I basically just do some chirps. It, every time they gobble, I'll try to respond to something. That's about all I know.
Oh man, it's so. We'll go through a quick morning hunt, okay?
Yeah.
Let's hope we get successful here. So we get up in the morning, we get out, and you hear a bird just hammering off the roost. I won't call to him. I won't do a yelp or anything like that to him. I'll use a crow call. Or an owl call, whichever one he's more responsive to get in position to him. And a lot of times you got to keep in mind, they want to fly down in a spot where they're going to be seen. A turkey always wants to be seen. He's going to try and take the high road, so that way all his girlfriends can come see him. So try to figure out where he's going to be. If you don't know, if you already know, then use your crow call to keep him up in the tree or keep knowing where he's at. And then sit down and start doing real light yelps. Once you get set up and you got a good spot, real light yelps, they're called tree yelps.
Okay.
And that lets him know that the hens are hearing him and they're in the tree yet. And then when it starts getting lighter, they take forever. Like, you know, when you're bow hunting or you're deer hunting, that first light comes around, there's deer moving.
Yeah.
I've seen numerous deer, like, it's still almost blackout and they're walking underneath you. These birds don't get down like that. At least around here, they don't.
Yeah.
And then, I'll do a real quick fly down cackle. It's just a, I don't know, if you YouTube it or whatever, you can hear them when they fly out, they cackle like crazy until they hit the ground. And yep. And I do them short, so that way it doesn't sound like they flew 200 yards away or 100 yards away. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And then I'll just pretty much just purr and do a couple clucks to make it sound like they're feeding. And then do a couple yelps. And then once I know they're on the ground, because you a lot of times if you can get close enough, you can hear them.
Yeah.
You'll hear them get out on the ground and stuff. Then you start pouring the coal to it. You start doing some yelps, start doing some cuts, do some purrs. And then eventually you'll get it flipped around to where the tom is responding to you. You see, in nature, the hens are supposed to go to the tom.
Yeah.
So if you can get him to start gobbling, you get him warmed up and you shut up on him, you notice it'll take him under 10 seconds and he'll gobble again if you don't respond.
Yeah.
Make him gobble again. And then start responding to him gobbling and then shut up again. That's just my technique. There's hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of them out there that people do, but that's just what I do. And they come in.
Dude, so maybe I just need to get out and hunt with somebody who really knows what they're doing when it comes to turkey hunting, because I feel like most of my buddies are in the same position as I am, or maybe like a year or two ahead of me in the sport. Cause I only started a few years ago, and I haven't heard anybody that I've gone out and hunted with talk about all these different types of calls, when to do it, when not to. And so we basically just make a bunch of noise and hopefully they come in. But like wow. I said, we still end up killing them, but it's because we're going after them, not necessarily because they're coming to us. There's a lot that I'm going to have to look up on YouTube as far as calling goes and try to figure that out, figure out how to work my calls the right way, get good at actually making the right noise. What about decoys? What are you using for decoys?
I actually went in halves with a buddy. We've got a Jake and a Hen Avian X decoy. We put them out, and I've just run a Jake and a Hen set. Toms I've had before, but it feels like if after, you know, you get into Wisconsin's first and second season, they've been beat up a couple times. And for some reason, the toms, they see it and they'll hang up and display, you know, they'll stay out there 60, 70 yards and they'll display and they'll gobble and everything, or they'll see that tom and then they'll book it the other way.
Yeah.
So a Jake is, you know, inferior. He's lower on the totem pole. And if you get, especially if you get two toms coming in, there's going to be a fight.
Yeah.
So.
Okay. Yeah. I've done, I'm trying to think. I haven't had any like real good decoys. I had that real thin foam decoy that you buy at Walmart that everybody's had at some point or another. It moves really well in the wind, but it just looks like basically a gray turkey, like an all gray turkey. It's ugly as can be. And then I did get one of those Featherlight. I don't remember if that's the right name. Basically, it's the
Flextone?
No, it's the inflatable one, and it's kind of shiny. It's like blowing up an inner tube for the pool.
Oh, yeah, right? Yeah.
And
yeah.
It's got a realistic head, but the rest of it is basically just that plastic that's got the seam around it. You blow it up. Same type of deal. It moves really well in the wind. This year is the first year that I've actually got. I've got the feeder hen Avian X. I was between that and the breeder, but I feel like the grass where I hunt is typically too tall for that to even be useful at all. And then, yeah, like I said, I got that Funky Chicken by Flextone, and
nice.
And so that's it, man. Those are the decoys I've got. And I just didn't know, like, with ducks, it's always a toss up. You could put six out and have a ton of birds come in. You might have to put 150 out and you have a ton come in. Right. I keep telling people I kind of want to try putting a big spread of turkey decoys out, because typically when I see them in the field, there's a lot of them out there. And so I'm like, maybe that'll entice them to come over.
What? I tell you what, do you come up to Wisconsin turkey hunting ever?
I have not yet. I keep talking about it. I've got family up in the Manitowoc Two Rivers area, and my cousin Sam gets on birds like you wouldn't believe. I mean, like, he gets, I think they had 18 hunters last year, just people that he knows and takes out. Nice. And he got 17 of them toms. And so, like, he does really well. But you have to put in for an application now, don't you? Like, I think he texted me not that long ago. Well, actually, now I feel like it is quite a while ago. And he's like, did you put in for turkey? And I'm like, no, when do I have to do it? And I had already missed the deadline for it. So,
yeah. So it's by December 10th, I believe, you have to have your, is the deadline. You can apply, I believe it's in the fall, early fall, you can start your application. But basically all it is you put in for your preference season. Generally speaking around here, first and second go like hotcakes.
Yeah.
But then they have rollover seasons that you can take. So you could buy in March, I think March 24th or so, they went on sale.
Okay.
And then you can just buy them over the counter.
Oh, nice.
When they go on sale. Yeah. So the application process is to lock in your early season, but you can buy them over the tag once those tags are claimed and leftovers go on sale.
Okay. So yeah, maybe that's what I need to figure out is getting a tag, what season to put in for, or like, are there still tags available or do they sell out? Like when they
right
go?
Now there's tags available. Yeah.
Oh,
there's,
nice.
I believe. Oh, I guess. And then they were saying something, they switched something over to a bonus tag this year too. So I guess I don't really know, but I know in the past around this time, the tail end seasons, you know, fifth and sixth were always available.
Yeah. I'll have to take a look at that because I know he's got people that are split up quite a bit between all the different seasons. Do you know, I just haven't looked into it, man. I really haven't. Well, do you know what the non-resident prices are for a turkey tag?
I never left Wisconsin, Dan. That's not my fault. I'm sorry.
I'm the trader. You're not.
Yeah, right. I'll take you turkey hunting if you want to go, but.
Man, yeah, I need to check it out. I keep telling people I'm offering turkey hunting down here. Like I said, we've got tons of them, and I just suck at it. And so I'm like, dude, if you want to come down and teach me how to turkey hunt, you're welcome to come shoot one of the turkeys that are on the property. I just run and gun almost all the time. I'll put decoys out hoping that it's going to work out. It never does the way it's supposed to. And so I just chase them down and shoot them. I say that. People are probably going to have the image in their head of me literally sprinting across a field blasting at birds. That's not what I mean by that. I just try to get ahead of them.
Right. Well, we might have to remedy that situation. You're down in Missouri, so you have Easterns down there, don't you?
Yep, we've got Easterns here. We've got the 18th through May 8th. That's our turkey season here. So.
Oh, really? So you've got one season for
one season. Yep, one season. We can shoot two birds. You can't shoot two birds on the first week. I think that's the big stipulation. And then after that, you can shoot two birds on the same week. And I would have to look it up to know if you can actually, maybe it's like the second half of season, you can even shoot two in the same day. I don't remember. I'd have to look up the regs on that.
Oh, boy.
I know. I'm like, dude, that would be fun, man, to have them come in and stacked on top of each other and one shot drop two of them. I've watched those videos, man. My goal this year is to actually fill both my turkey tags. I haven't done that yet. And I'm thinking that if I can get one with my shotgun, I'm going to switch over to my bow for the whole rest of season and try to get one with my bow.
Oh, dude, that'd be phenomenal. So, if you
I say this like it's going to happen, dude. It's who knows? Who knows what's going to pan out, but I need to get turkey broadheads. I don't even have the right tips for my arrows.
Oh yes, yeah. I never even thought of that.
I mean,
I
would guess I could still shoot one with my. I'm using Rage Hypodermics. I don't know why you couldn't, but I've also seen those guillotine tips where it lops their head off. That'd be kind of fun.
Yeah, that's straight medieval right there, buddy.
It is.
I don't see why you couldn't use a Rage for a turkey broadhead. I mean, as long as you're hitting them in the vitals.
Yeah.
You know, you're hitting them at that wing crest. I don't see why it wouldn't. Those are a 2-inch cut diameter, aren't they?
Yeah, I think mine are. Yeah, I want to say mine are 2-inch cut diameter.
Okay, because I know like my Schwackers, they're a 1-inch entry and then they expand into a 2.
Oh, okay.
So I think Rage is, that's, or are they 2.5?
I don't think mine are 2.5. I think they're 2-inch.
Okay.
I'm pretty sure that's right. I haven't bought new broadheads. I don't think I bought them this year at all. I think I bought new nocturnals or lighted nocs. I bought off-brand ones on Amazon, but yeah, I don't think I've bought broadheads recently.
Nice.
Typically,
dude,
I get a
Amazon
lot of
Amazon for hunting stuff.
Oh, I know. It's the best.
Yeah. Yeah, it's so handy and it's so quick to get to where you want to get and what you want to get. And I mean, if you have your mind set up or made up for what you want, that's aces.
Amazon is just, it's so good. And knowing that there's something on its way, like I don't go to the store to buy most things anymore. Even if I know they have it, like Amazon's going to have a great deal on it. They're going to have a ton of reviews. They're going to have videos. They've got all the specs. As long as you actually read the fine print on it or like the item description, you're going to know for sure that it's the one for you. But dude, I'm telling you, we have an Amazon addiction around my house. We've had a couple partnerships in the past where they pay in Amazon gift cards and it's like, well, we can't pay our bills with that, which means it's just fun money. And yeah, we buy crap on Amazon all the time.
Oh, man.
I wonder if we can be like elite members or something.
My wish list is like 8 miles long, too.
Oh, yeah, it really is. I'm like, dude, if someone gave me – that's the problem, though. If someone gave me like $1 million, it'd be gone on Amazon like that fast. And And I always tell my wife, I'm like, all right, I think I've got everything I need. I think I've got everything I need until I go on Amazon and it's got like the suggested or people also bought.
Where have you been my
and,
whole
yeah,
life?
I'm like, this is amazing. And also I'm going to be broke. I am going to be so broke.
Right.
Yeah. They know how to market to me. But dude, I had a ton of fun chatting and we are going to have to get together. Whether you want to come down to Missouri and turkey hunt, I'll come up there and turkey hunt. However we need to play that, we need to get together and do it so I can see how it's supposed to happen. And
oh, dude, don't be setting me up like that, because now it's going to go right straight south.
I hope not, man. If it does come south, just pass by my house.
There we go.
we need to get together and hunt. And definitely as you continue to elk hunt, man, maybe we'll have to link up out there out west sometime.
Oh man, that sounds like a plan.
I feel like all of my hunting progressions are leading more towards archery everything. I don't think I'll ever fully give up my second rifle season in Colorado, but that's my next big move when it comes to elk hunting is trying to get one with a bow. And I just want to be in there when they're rutting hard, when they're upset, when they come into calls, or like when you can get up close and personal with them. Oh, that'd be sweet.
Hey, let's make it happen, man. I got my bugle tubes and my mouth calls. Let's do it.
Dude, I'm all about it. Well, hey, before we hop off the call, I want to give you a chance, share with people where they can find you, where they can follow you, so that they can keep up and just see how good you are at whacking turkeys this spring.
Oh, man, if you want to follow me, I'm on TikTok, I'm on Instagram and Facebook. I guess... I don't even remember my handles for those platforms. I'll have to get a link ready for them or something.
I was going to say, I'll throw it in the episode description as well so people can just hop on there and click your name and follow along.
Oh, perfect, perfect. Yeah, we've only got a couple weeks, man. The gobblers are going to be dropping, hopefully. I mean, I've got a couple people lined up to take out and get them out and see if we can get it happening.
Well, dude, good luck. Keep me up to date on that. And yeah, man, next time I come up to Wisconsin, we'll have to get together and hopefully, like I said, get out on a hunt soon.
Oh, for sure, man. Anytime you let me know, I'm game.
And that is going to wrap it up for today's show. I had an awesome time chatting with Ethan, and unfortunately, he did not fully convert me into a turkey hunter. I will say, though, the more people I talk to who are excited about turkey hunting, the more passionate I get about going out and chasing after them. But I feel like to fully catch that bug is going to be It's going to take a big gobbler coming in and doing it the right way. So we'll see if that happens. I mean, turkey season is right around the corner. I'm super pumped. I can't wait to get out. I've got all of my gear just waiting, looking at me like, take me out. We want a turkey hunt. It's going to be a lot of fun. Hopefully you guys are getting out, enjoying the outdoors. Hopefully spring is upon you. I know that South Dakota, it's North Dakota. They just got hit with like almost 5 feet of snow, which is crazy. I love the cold. I don't like getting, 40 or 50 inches dumped on at the same time. But if you guys are out enjoying spring, good for you. And until next time, always choose adventure and God bless.